Good morning.
Good morning.
You know that the composition of the Gospels was a very long, involved, and rich process. Stage one, you've got Jesus, what he actually did, what he actually said. And there was a lot of it, of course. As it says in John's Gospel, if they wrote down everything he said and did, there wouldn't be enough place to put the books. But in the second stage, after his death and resurrection, the apostles go out and preach. And they quote Jesus a lot. They tell stories about what he did. They tell the stories that he told. They tell the sayings, and so on and so on, picking and choosing from what he said and did to what they think is most important for their people to know, will help them best in the instruction of their congregations. And sometimes developing a bit. You get a parable that Jesus tells, and then right behind it, you get an allegory based on that parable, that the apostles reworked the parable for a different reason. And then finally, at a third level, you've got the gospel writers taking all of that stuff, organizing it, putting it through an editorial process into an artistic framework, creating an integrated written gospel. And all that's inspired by the Holy Spirit, and we learn a lot from every stage in the process. But you know, I think it's just natural for us to get curious about, well, what comes from that first stage? How do we know when we're listening to Jesus and not to the early church or to Matthew, the gospel writer? You know, if you have one of those old-fashioned Bibles that have the words of Jesus in the red type, how much of the red type really ought to be red type? How much is verbatim quotes from Jesus? And while we'll pay attention to everything, we might pay a little bit more attention to the verbatim quotes from Jesus when we know we're listening to the voice of the Lord. Well, this morning's gospel is one of those. This is a pretty much verbatim quote from Jesus. And the real scholarly work on that has been done by John Meyer, an American Jesuit, who's published now 4 out of what I think will ultimately be a 5-volume set on that research of that kind, getting back to what Jesus actually said and did at the very beginning of this process. And he points out a very strong reason for saying this has got to be from Jesus himself, in that it shows a very deep knowledge of the Torah and of rabbinic exegetical principles. There's something interesting going on here that gets obscured, I think, in the English. The first commandment begins, "You shall love." But actually, if you go back to Deuteronomy from which it is taken, it is, "And you shall love it," or "And you shall love him, the Lord your God." Or maybe, "And you shall love her, the Lord your God." The ending could be masculine or feminine, but it's not neuter. It's not the way the form that you would use to say that I love your beef stew. It's love of a person. "And you shall love him, her." That's all one word in Hebrew. The Hebrew verb is different than the English verb. We keep a nice simple verb, and then we surround it by all kinds of auxiliaries to make the differentiations. We put a subject to it. We put an object to it. We put auxiliary verbs in there to show you whether it's indicative or interrogative or imperative, whether it's past or present or perfect or second person or third person or singular or plural. All of that goes into other words. In Hebrew, that all goes into the one word. It's a different form. You take a basic 3-letter stem and you add other letters fore and aft of it, and you change the vowels in it to make all the differences. So you get one fairly complex word, "And you shall love him." Ve'ahavta. And that particular complex form of the verb to love is found only twice in the Torah. Well, actually 4 times, but the other 2 times it's an echo. It's found here in this quote in Deuteronomy, and four verses later where they're reprising that line. And it's found in this quote in Leviticus, and about 10 verses later where they're reprising that line. So in the whole Torah, the word is only used twice. Now, there's a rabbinical exegetical rule that says whenever the same language is used in two different texts, that can be used as a link between them. And you take those two texts and set them side by side and exegete them in light of each other. So, and you shall love him, occurring only twice in those two texts. It's a natural link to bring them together. But that's not as easy as it looks. I mean, today it is, for us. You can take a book the size of the Bible and you want to find out where such and such a word is used. You put the searchable database up, you type in the word you're looking for, in a couple seconds it comes back with every single occurrence. Concordance building is simple in a computer. They didn't have computers. Before that, it was a lot more work. File cards. You put every word on a different file card with its source reference on it, and then you arrange the file cards in alphabetical order and found the matches that way. That's how scholars did it in the last century. They didn't have file cards. They didn't have books. They had scrolls, you know. Very elaborate, very expensive, hand-lettered scrolls. You didn't even have one at home. If your village synagogue had one for the house of study, it had to double as well as in synagogue. Mm-hmm. Also, at Friday night, it was in shul. Saturday morning, they took it over to the house of study so that you could study it. Saturday afternoon, they brought it back for the final service. One for the village. To do this kind of linkage, to find these two unique occurrences of this verb, you got to know an awful lot of Torah by heart. That's a very impressive achievement to be able to link those two together. And Jesus, very much the devout Jew, the reader and memorizer of Torah, and very much the rabbi, knowing how to do this process, puts it together and gives it out as teaching. In answer to a reasonable question, it was debated at that time. I mean, there's 613 commandments in the Torah. Everybody knows that. Well, which of those are most important? Can we study them all with equal attention? Can we keep them all with equal fervor? You want to make sure you're not straining out the gnat and swallowing the camel. So there was a healthy debate. Which are the most important commandments of the Torah? And which ones will, you know, if followed, lead to all the other ones in place? Which are the pivot points of the Torah? And that was a reasonable question for rabbis to debate. Jesus is asked that question. And he gives an answer relying on this Gezerah Shavah, this linkage of text by common words, to say the first, and you shall love him, the Lord your God. And the second, and you shall love him, your neighbor. Very impressive. And it tells us that it comes from Jesus, right? Except you might say, does it really have to come from Jesus? Haven't we been saying all year that Matthew is a very well-trained rabbi and puts these arguments together in true rabbinic fashion and structures his book that way even? Couldn't he have done it? This is the first and greatest commandment, and the second is like it. Like it. Linked text. Like it. Couldn't Matthew have done that? Except that the story doesn't come originally from Matthew. This is Matthew's version of an earlier story told in Mark. When Mark tells the story, it doesn't say, and the second is like it. It just says the first is you shall love, and the second is you shall love without the is like it. It's because Mark is a Gentile, doesn't have that deep knowledge of the Hebrew text of the Torah, probably reads his Torah in the Septuagint in Greek. His teaching, a primarily, almost exclusively, Greek congregation for whom he has to explain simple Aramaic words and simple Hebrew concepts in the text of his gospel. So, a goy writing for the goyim, you know, this is way over his head. He would not have invented something like this. The only reason it's in his gospel is that it is in his memory. He has this handed down from Jesus. He doesn't understand the fullness of it, doesn't understand the Gezer Shavah part and how it gets put together. But he remembers the striking teaching, you shall love the Lord your God, you shall love your neighbor. And he repeats it. Now along comes Matthew. Matthew, the rabbi, recognizes it. Mark has got it just because it's history. Matthew now wants to expand it, explore it. So, recognizing what Jesus is doing here, he adds the second is like it. So when you put all the evidence together, it goes back to Jesus. Jesus, the itinerant Galilean rabbi of the 20s, is saying you're listening to him preach. When he says this, the first and greatest commandment, you shall love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. This is the voice of Jesus. A lot of other things, maybe, probably, you know. Love your enemy. Yeah, Jesus probably said that. But we can't be sure because everybody said that. There's so many other sources for it, and it was just sort of in the air. But this one, this is the voice of Jesus. You're listening to his words. Now, that's not just a piece of intellectual curiosity, although it's certainly quite an intellectual, delectable tidbit. You know, it's a delicatessen item. But it's also quite a challenge. If this is the voice of Jesus, then this is something we need to take pretty seriously. How do we respond to it? Where do we stand? I think if we're honest, the answer has to be, well, sorta. Of course you love the Lord your God. Would you be out of bed at this hour on a Sunday morning if you didn't? You'd be sacked in with everybody else. Of course you love the Lord your God. But do you love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole soul, and your whole mind? Is it an abiding, personal relationship? How often do you talk to God? I don't mean say prayers. We all say prayers, and that's good. But how often do we just talk to God with the simplicity and confidence that a daughter or a son uses with a parent? How often is your mind turning to your Abba? Is it something that you feel not just in your head, not just in your heart, but down deep in your gut? Is it a fire in your bones? What do you need to do to strengthen it? Well, give you the same advice marriage counselors give. Pay more attention to it. Yeah, you've been married for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. You've got a good marriage. You love each other. You rely on each other. You're there for each other. It's solid. But, you know, it's cooled off a bit. You run the risk of taking each other for granted. Well, go out on a date once in a while. Seduce each other once in a while. Spend some time together just being in love once in a while. Same with the relationship with God. Spend a little time together. Get to the point where you can say with Jeremiah, you seduced me and I let you. Make it a fire in your bones. Spend time with your God and love the Lord your God with your whole heart and your whole soul and your whole mind. Same way the second commandment, the one that is like it, and you shall love him, her, your neighbor, as yourself. Do we love our neighbors? Sure. We're good, equitable people. We try to be fair with everybody. We try to be tolerant and forgiving. We even try to be compassionate and merciful, at least to some extent. But do we love our neighbor as ourselves? Yeah, I'm concerned for my neighbor's welfare. If I see him in trouble, I'll stop and help. But does it really stir me the way my own misfortune would? Does his joy really lighten up my eyes the way it would if it happened to me? Do I really care about her the way I care about me? Probably not. Could probably use a little stirring up, a little intensification, a little more of our attention. And that will always be true. You know, it's a gradual process without limit and therefore without end. But those are the practical ways of fulfilling. And you shall be holy as the Lord your God is holy. You shall be compassionate as the Lord your Father is compassionate. Love God with your whole heart. Love your neighbor as yourself. Keep taking one more step in that process. Secure in the knowledge that these are really important things to do, because this is a pretty much direct verbatim quote from Jesus. When he was asked, what is the greatest commandment? This is what he said. And you shall love him, ve'ahavtah, the Lord your God, with all your whole heart. And you shall love him, ve'ahavtah, your neighbor as yourself. Jesus said that to you and to me. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.